Off the Ball Breakfast.
With Viagra Connect 50 milligram film coated tablets. Contains sildenafil for adult men with erectile dysfunction. Maximum dosage 150 milligram tablet per day. Always read the label. Buy online at viagraconnect.ie. Subject to suitability following pharmacist consultation.
Chair.
Sure. So it's an hour and a half to start the show on how bad the season was for Cavan and Kildare and who has it worse.
Yeah, we're just two people mourning our county's troubles, aren't we?
It's like the greatest weekend of Gaelic football that we've seen in at least a year.
Yeah.
And we're like, nah, no, it's not. Let's talk about Scotland and Haiti and the Scottish fans.
Yeah, talk about anything else but the Gaelic football. Yeah, I was at Cavan Dublin there yesterday. And you know what? We were very competitive in the first half. I was actually surprised in how good we were, and probably should have been 4, 5, even 6 points up at half time. Left a lot of scores behind us. Scores you fancy the fellas taking them to polish off, but then Dublin, yeah, they just seem to click. It's probably the best I've seen Dublin all season long. Once they actually got a bit of possession, because they didn't really have much of the ball in the first half, but then once they actually settled into the game the second half, you know, you look at that four line, the talent in them. Conor Callan was playing very well, Kieran Kilkenny. Colin Basquel came on early enough for Comer Costello, who went off with a dead leg. They just started clicking and we had no real answer for it.
14,500, that was the figure I saw.
It felt like a lot more as well.
All right,
it felt close to 20. But it was a good Dublin travelling crowd, but there was a good few home supporters out as well. Dublin kind of had turned the town side of Breffni Park into a bit of a Hill 16. Oh, it was great, and they had a chance going. It was a great atmosphere. And there was a lot of kids there now. I know Cavan County Board made a point to bring down a lot of teams as well. The new teams came down, so it was a really good atmosphere, and it definitely felt like I feel like the official attendance was about 14,500, but the actual attendance was closer to 20.
Oh, you think 000. A lot of people sneaked in?
Potentially.
Whoa, I'm
not putting that on anyone,
over.
But yeah, there was quite a few in Breffni Park. It was packed out. I haven't seen it that full since probably pre-COVID almost. It was a great atmosphere. And that's been an issue for both teams this season, really, is actually getting fans to come down to the game. Probably helped that it was a sunny day, 2 o'clock. It was a good kickoff for a Sunday, so that definitely helped. But it was good to see.
I am interested to hear what the Dubs fans think about why Dubs fans have stopped going to the games. A lot of speculation about it at the weekend.
Yeah.
Macroeconomic issues, boredom. Maybe there's been no jeopardy up until now. What's the point in going?
Yeah.
Brennan's talking about he wants the game in Pirate. We'll do more on this in the...
Definitely, yeah.
But if you're a Dublin fan out there this morning, let's be having you. What's going on?
Is it just a thing of like, you've been so successful for so long that once you're not so successful... Like, I find this as a Man United fan, like, when Ferguson left, I was probably like...
What's the point
13
anymore?
13 or 14 years old, and I was a bit like, well, this is a bit shit, isn't it? This isn't what I'm used to.
Yeah, and that's when they need you the most.
Probably. And I turn my back on them. No, I'm still supporting them. But like, there is a little bit of that where it's like, you become so used to beating teams and then, you know, like to get the win at the weekend, but, you know, they go out and play Westmeath and Croke Park and they're taking extra time to lose the game. It's like, geez, you wouldn't be used to that as a Dublin fan.
No, and that is exactly the time I'd say that if Gerard Brennan had been the manager all year, they would have felt more connected. Maybe a victory at the weekend makes them feel more connected. Maybe Conn playing the full game. Because at one point, listening on the radio, they were like, oh, Conn seems to have pulled up there, but he seems to have finished the game and there was no mention of an injury afterwards. So
it looked all right. Sean Bugler, I know, picked up an injury before the game, and Cormac Costello, as I said, picked up a dead leg as well. But that was it as far as injury concerns, I think, for them. So they came out of the fixture pretty well on that side of things. And I think they can take a lot of confidence. Like, look, Cavan... It's between them and Kildare out of who's the worst team in this year's All-Ireland draw, but like, they can still take a good bit of confidence about how they played in the second half, because things started to click, and having Pádraig Ó Cuaig Bhearn back, oh my god, I don't think I've seen a bigger human. It's like when you go to a sporting event and there is just a particularly big person on a team, you're like, geez, that is the biggest fella I've ever seen. He is huge. And there was one point I was joking to the lads there this morning that he ended up on Emmanuel Shehu, who's one of Cavan's bright sparks of the season, but he's not the biggest guy in the half-forward line, and they kind of ended up in a mismatch for a while in midfield at the kickouts. And there was a time where he was just holding Emmanuel with one hand and taking the ball down with the other, and it was just... Yeah, there's not much you can do about that. So I think they figured out after a while, let's just get Patrick O'Coughlin under the ball. They probably, in the first half, they didn't seem to want to rely on that too much just because of what happened in the Westmeath game. Is he went down and went off injured, and then they were kind of like,
what are we doing?
Like, yeah, we've no plan B here, but listen, if you have him on the pitch.
It's also the time of the year where it's shit or bust. So, right, let's be having, if you were at a game this weekend, how was it? What did you see? Give us your impromptu power rankings. And it's going to be interesting power ranking shows this week because there's a few teams, I'd say from 4 or 5 to 8 or 9, who will be below where they should be and who might fancy themselves, depending on how this draw goes this morning, to go on a bit of a run, either coming through a match that they lost and thinking, well, actually, you know, we've shown something there, or bouncing out of the games that they've won into next weekend and thinking, yeah, we're alive and well. So anyway, it is 7:36, time for us to get into this week's performance rankings.
The good?
Is it a step too far to say it was the performance so far of the World Cup? Maybe not.
The bad?
I'm scratching my head. The performances was just lacked that intensity.
And the amber?
Off the balls, performance rankings.
So we're very, very heavy in the performance rankings on the weekend's Gaelic football. Mm. But that's kind of because we don't know what to talk about when it comes to the World Cup.
Yeah, 100%. Like, it's, I suppose it's so early on that you don't really know where teams are at. I felt watching particularly the Netherlands-Japan game yesterday, the neither team wanted to lose as opposed to both teams wanted to win, if that makes sense. I felt like they were kind of afraid to show their full hand because they understand that, you know, you pick up a draw in this game, you know, you fancy yourself, they both probably fancy themselves to win their next two games, you're true. A lot of the third place finishes or finishers will go through anyway from the group stages. So I felt like,
I'd say, well, look,
but the second half was good.
So many third place teams have gone through, but Sweden and Tunisia are the other teams in the group. And I don't think we knew that Tunisia was bad. So for people who went to bed last night after the 2-2 draw and haven't heard, Sweden won 5-1 against Tunisia. Everybody's favourite failure strikers from the last 12 months turned out to be really good. Isak and Jokeres can play together and were excellent. And so they looked as good as you can do, I suppose, winning 5-1 in your opening fixture. It's not going to get any better than this. Let's just put it like that. And then the other one was a 89th minute winner for Amad Diallo.
Yeah.
As Ivory Coast beat Ecuador by a goal to nil.
Those celebrations were great to see. Yeah, I it's at a point where it's hard to start ranking teams. I suppose the only teams you can really rank are maybe a Germany or a Sweden who have come out and put on a comprehensive performance. Like, Germany were excellent against Curaçao. And Curaçao actually were very competitive for the first maybe 35, 40 minutes. They really gave Nagelsmann and Germany a fright there when they scored that equaliser, but 7-1 in the end. Like, they look a proper team. Like, you're talking about maybe Premier League flops or whatever this season, Florian Wirtz, oh my God, when he's playing well, Jesus, he's some player, and he's great to watch as well. So I'd fancy them to go very deep in the tournament. I kind of wasn't thinking about Germany at all, to be honest. When you're talking about favourites, they've probably gone a little bit under the radar.
I wasn't thinking about the Dutch too much either until you see the team and you're like, oh, actually, you know what? If a few of their players avoid injury and they keep that group, they could be decent. Again, it's the Dutch. Who knows what's going to happen?
They always go deep into tournaments and largely under the radar as well. They always seem to make a semi-final at least. And they always have good crop of players. My only concern with them is maybe they're going in a little bit light in terms of depth. We'll talk to, we have Finley Kerbolder on the show later on, who's a Dutch football journalist. We'll get into this later, but I think their depth would be a concern for me just because, just looking at that bench, like, they do have good players coming on, but Weghorst is on the bench, Memphis Depay is on the bench. They just feel like they're a tournament past it, maybe.
Memphis Depay should have been sent off.
I know, that's up for debate.
Well, it's like a shoulder charge to the face. In rugby, that's a red card.
Yeah, you know,
even getting football, that's a red card
whatsoever. Yeah,
and they're like, "No, I'm going to give you a yellow." And VAR doesn't look at it. I don't know. Is VAR allowed to look at that?
I think you can if it's really egregious, surely.
S. Cook on YouTube says, "I'm living in Vancouver. The World Cup has taken over the place. There are so many people from all over the world living here, and it's absolutely class. There were some incredible scenes from Times Square." Bearing in mind that they were up against the NBA Finals.
Yeah, it's kind of like the crowds are mixed in together, so it's hard to decipher what is what. But it seems to, like, watching the game in Houston there yesterday as well, they were talking about the city has been taken over by it, and it's not a soccer place, like that's not a soccer town, and it was packed out 60 odd or 70 odd thousand I think it was in the stadium, so it seems to have taken over. Well, the nations, but
it's not as bad as it could have been, I think.
Yeah, that's what I'm getting at. Yeah.
It's our very low expectations have been cleared so far for this farrago of a World Cup where there's too many games, and it's
there are too many games, aren't there?
It feels that way. That's why it's difficult to know what to talk about. Like, which of these things, which of the thousand data points that we have so far are actually important from a football perspective? And then there's all the politics. Overnight, Trump is tweeting that there's peace breaking out. That the Strait of Hormuz will be open again, which might remove a bit of the tension around Iran going to a match in America. We'll see. All the rest of that heartbreaking stuff about the Somali referee and all that stuff as well that happened over the last few weeks while I've been away. I don't know if you were talking about it, but like it's kind of, you know, you're like, oh, let's all make FIFA rich. There was a piece in The Athletic the other day reporting about the tickets for the American match, how some fans had waited till the last minute and got a sweetheart deal, 50% off. And then you read the piece and 50% off was $1,400. And they were delighted because obviously it was an incredible performance from them.
Yeah.
But because it was an incredible performance from them, that strategy of waiting to the last minute now is not going to work for the next games because the bandwagon is going to ratchet up and FIFA are going to make all the money back that they might have lost from some of the empty seats in the first. So anyway.
Yeah. Yeah, I did think, like, looking at the Canada fixture, it was disappointing, the turnout. You know, it's a home opening fixture for Canada and it was not half the stadium not empty, but it was noticeable the amount of empty seats in the stadium. And that was, and it wasn't, didn't seem like a big stadium either. I didn't check the capacity of it, but that was disappointing. But yesterday's games seemed to be pretty well attended. So hopefully as the tournament goes on, it gets a bit better. Should we get into the actual rankings here?
Yeah, sorry. The one last one is, I don't know how much time we're going to get into it, but people talk about the Knicks, Dennis Ryan, Knicks and Green, because they've been badly managed for the last number of years, but finally. So the underdog story of the finals MVP, he's a little guy. He's only 6'2".
Jalen Brunson, yeah.
People are saying he's not really 6'2". That's like a pretend that he's actually I think he's smaller still.
I think he's a 6 foot, 6 foot one type of player. Like he
scored 40 points.
45 points. So, and
in the final, 15 in a row.
Yeah, so the rest of his teammates combined scored 49 points. So he scored effectively half of his team's points in a closeout games in the final. That is unheard of.
Michael Jordan-esque performance.
100%, like even beyond that. Like, because he's a funny one in that, like, he's always been, so his dad played for the Knicks and he came into the NBA and everyone like acknowledged that he was a good maybe second option player and that he was a top player in the NBA, but never.
But a second round pick.
Once he got into the league and played a couple of seasons, people recognised that he was a good player. But he's always been doubted by everyone, really, like teams and the media over there, that, you know, you can't be a number one guy in the modern NBA and be small. And it's kind of like what the NBA was like when Michael Jordan was coming into it, that was always said that, you know, he was, I think Jordan was the second number two pick when he came in. I think he was number two or number three. And there was a lot of questions around it because he was too small. It was like, your best player can't be small in the NBA. It has to be a big guy. And that seemed to be the case with Jalen Brunson when the Knicks kind of seemed to be going that way with him, that they were trusting him as the number one option. And it was just like, he's good, but, and that's, he said that himself in the post-game interview, that, you know, that's always been the talk around him, that everyone acknowledges that he's a really good player, but he's 6'2".
And now he's an absolute superstar because he's won the Knicks their first title in four and a half decades or whatever it is.
Talk about him being the best Knicks player of all time, which I don't think is actually too crazy because he's brought a title back for the first time in 53 years.
And then somebody, one last point before we get into it. Oh, I just lost it here. Anyway. Okay, sorry. It was a good point that somebody made in the comments.
Have you seen New York? The state of New York right now.
I understand that some people maybe lost the run of themselves.
Taken too far a little bit. It was great to see the celebrations.
This is what it's going
to
be like if Mayo ever win.
Yeah, well,
buses is burning.
Castle Bar, yeah.
Shot fired.
Yeah, well, that's been the negative side of it so far. And it was kind of a joke throughout the whole playoffs that if the Knicks get to the finals, win or lose, that the city of New York would be turned upside down. And that's actually happening. for the most part, it seems to be pretty positive and people are enjoying themselves. And I've seen loads of Instagram stories of Irish people over there. There's obviously a big Irish diaspora in New York and that area and kind of the Boston area as well. And it's been flooded. But yeah, there have been some negative side effects to this whole thing, and that some people are taking it up as an opportunity to maybe, you know, express their violent sides, yeah, their personalities, which is a shame. But it shouldn't override what's actually going on and the joy around it. And the city itself is having a great time. Like Mam Danny seems to come in and rejuvenated just the entire population there. So it's a good time to be a New Yorker.
Yeah, I did hear some people talking about how this is actually, you're going to look back and think that this is a golden age for New York. The other question, somebody in the comments was like, any chat about the Katie Taylor sellout? Well, check our feeds. Eddie Hearn was on Friday talking about it. I think at that point there was still some round tickets left. He was at pains to point out just to make sure that anybody who was listening might take the opportunity. But it's a remarkable achievement.
It's brilliant. Yeah. And like we weren't sure, I suppose, when it was announced and it all came true that Croke Park was going to happen, whether she'd sell it out or not. And there's no slight on her whatsoever. It was just like, it's such a big place. It's 80 plus thousand. Like it's a really difficult thing to sell out, and it's only sold out once a year. Like,
I think dynamic pricing. You know, they didn't do that. They made it family accessible, and 40 quid a ticket.
Yeah,
I think there's huge lessons for people to learn. Anyway, we'll leave that one there because it's a...
Yeah, we'll come back to that during the week for sure. So we'll start off the actual rankings with Louth and Cork. The reason I put them together is because
They play in red.
Because they pulled off the biggest shocks of the weekend, I would say. You know, Louth, I suppose people will put that down to a bit of luck towards the end, and look, it is. Sam Mulroy kicks the ball in, a bit of a hopeful effort from outside the two-point arc, and Ethan Rafferty spills the ball into the net. But look, they put themselves in the position to get that, to, you know, achieve that type of luck. You know, you make your own luck, as they say. And, you know, Armagh, a lot of people would have them as...
They were number one in the power rankings for a lot of people.
100%.
Have come through the front door, look like they got over some of the issues they've had.
And so to stick in the game with them for 70 minutes and to give yourself that opportunity with the last kick of the game to win it, I think is testament to them. They win it by 1 point in the end, and it looked like, you know, it was titled as Scenes in Inishkeen, and it looked absolutely mental there. It looked like a great occasion for Louth people. And we talk about under the radar teams in the World Cup. They are one team that has been under the radar this season. They obviously, the loss to Dublin that time, and it seemed like there's nothing here this season. But
it was an abject performance. It was one of those performances that a team who doesn't believe in something puts in, and then they obviously have a brilliant manager. And it, you know, for a couple of years we felt like they were almost a one man team, but that's not the case anymore. Some of those young players have come through and just look like fully grown men who have 10 or 12 years into county experience and know what the story is. So I thought they were excellent.
That's a great story. And like, yeah, Gavin Devlin, the stuff he's doing up there, and he's been involved for a good while in the background. It's good to see that he's getting his flowers now as well. And then they're into a quarter final. Like, I don't think you can ask for much more as a Louth fan after last season winning Leinster. Maybe missed out another opportunity this season with it being wide open again. But I think Leinster will be wide open for the next few years, at least. So I think they'll have that chance again, and to go ahead and beat Armagh. And it technically was a home fixture, but not really. You know, it's not their home ground. They're up in Monaghan in Inishkeen. So to go out and compete with them with a team like Armagh for so long, and to give yourself that opportunity to, you know, get that bit of luck towards the end is a testament to them. And they're firmly in the green. Cork, obviously on a Saturday, no one saw this game unless you were there up in Ballybuffet, but that's a huge result for them. 113, 17 points, the final score.
Jim McGinnis is a pains to point out afterwards, this is their third successive home defeat in the championship going back to last year.
Yeah.
Like, what's going on?
No, it's very un-Donegal-like. But that shouldn't take away from the achievement on Cork's part. Like, John Cleary, they've had a really, really good season. Like, I thought they were unlucky in the Division 2 final. I was at that game and they played very well and they came out on the blocks firing, tailed off towards the end, but that was at a point where Meath were playing very good football throughout that league kind of campaign, and I don't think it was any surprise to see them win it, and they've just gone quietly about their business since then. And again, like Donegal, obviously beating Kerry twice this year, they're top three contenders. Like people will talk about whatever.
The Tommy Walsh two-pointer at the end.
So
Michael Murphy has the ball.
Yeah.
On the ground, and he scoops it to somebody, and it turns out it's Tommy Walsh, who is a beast, who's inside his own half, and is basically like stumbling when he gets it, and then gets into full stride, and then starts to stumble again, and just pings it over from it feels like 150 Something, yards out, straight over the black spot, and you're like, Jesus, could you do that again? can you? Is that a thing you have in your locker that you can just ping it over?
It feels like we're
effortlessly.
Seeing so many of those scores now, but I hope it doesn't become normal to see, if you know what I mean. Like, it's an incredible piece of skill. Like, Hobie McDonald is doing it every weekend now, it seems like, and Thomas Sullivan is an absolute master of it as well. Like, that type of score.
This is the Steph Curry-ization.
Yeah.
That's what's happening.
Yeah,
for those 100%. Teams who are able to do this now, because, like, that was a really tight game, and it was much lower scoring, it felt like, for the vast majority of it, and then it opened up in the last 10 minutes.
Yeah.
But that score was that one of those kind of scores that changes how you feel about a team, where it's like a young fella bursting out, announcing himself.
Yeah, well, I don't think there's any shortage of depth or talent in Donegal. I don't really know what you'd put it down to.
Oh, in Donegal?
Yeah. Like,
why they lost?
Yeah, like I suppose we didn't see the full game. that's probably why, but I wouldn't be too concerned about them. I think they'll get through whoever they get in these kind of prelim quarterfinals, if you will. I think they'll be fine. It's an extra game, though, and that's something that Donegal have made a point of over the last couple of seasons, obviously, is playing too many games, and now they have to play another game. But this now is down to their own fault. It was interesting over the weekend that, you know, four provincial winners got beaten. So it's kind of, I know they spoke about it after the Mayo-Tyrone game on RT, that, like, you know, what use is it to be winning a provincial championship at this point? I know everyone wants to win the,
I guess, if you're
the province, but
if you're asking, so the benefit for Louth last year was that they got that thing that they needed to get the bandwagon rolling.
Yeah.
Like, they were talking in the aftermath of the game about how they would have played matches in front of a few hundred and now they're selling at stadiums, and you're like, yeah, that's the success, and the silverware helps from that perspective, and it binds the team to the community. Like, I'd say me want one.
Yeah.
You know, I know it's such a dream for Kildare at the moment, but they want one. But it is a separate competition. That's it. It's a separate... Yeah. That competition's over, and Roscommon couldn't adapt this year. But I suspect they'll get the benefit of it next year. That...
I'd hope so, yeah.
And
I just think if you're I think I said this like a month ago on the show as well. Like, if you're a Donegal, or if you're a Galway, or if you're a Kerry... Leinster probably is no clear favourite right now for next year, say, but if you're a favourite in your province, a clear ahead favourite, and you're thinking at the start of the season, you know, injuries are going to happen, you know, players are going to get tired. If we want to prioritise games here and we see ourselves as All-Ireland contenders, you're not going to throw a provincial championship, because it means so much. I understand that, and particularly in a place like Ulster, like Donegal, I want to win it every single year, and so do Armagh, and so does everyone else. But Donegal also really want to win an All-Ireland, and it doesn't seem conducive to winning an All-Ireland
right
now.
I think I would agree with you. The one, there does seem to be, there's two benefits. Going out early in your provincial championship, and then you've got your four-week block that everybody keeps talking about. You know, Darren McCurry was absolutely sensational yesterday, and he's like, I haven't been fit for ages, and I had 2 weeks of proper fitness for the first time in ages. I suspect he starts the next week.
Yeah. Well, they might just keep him at a, you know, Jack McCarron type of role, and just hopefully a bit of boost off the bench, the way Monaghan have been getting from him. Like, if you look at Cavan Westmead, say, a couple of weeks ago, I think everyone can agree that Westmead are head and shoulders above Cavan right now, and they're a much better team, far better managed, and I think they're a lot more depth than us. But the fact that Westmead had to play a bunch of games in a row, won the provincial championship, was obviously a great day, so they went out and celebrated that for a few days after. Cavan had about 5 weeks of rest after being knocked out early by Monaghan. They came back refreshed and actually gave them a proper game, brought them the extra time, and probably should have won that game, really. Westmead deserved to win the end, and had to carry themselves in the second half of extra time, but they were really there for the taking. So it's even a fixture like that, in which, you know, Westmead are clearly a better team than Cavan, but getting brought right to the brink by them, it says a lot about, I think, where the provincial championships are at. And I, I, I would put a lot of weight, being from Cavan, being an Ulster football fan, I would put a lot of weight in the provincial championships, but it just doesn't seem like a good idea for All-Ireland contenders to chase right now. But I don't think that's going to change either.
Or if you can't win it either.
Yeah.
So there's two sides. If you realistically think that you're going to be able to win it, go through the front door, but even,
yeah,
you thought that it was all perfectly set up for Armagh, and here they find themselves in the draw this morning.
Yeah, exactly. So Louth and Cork, firmly in the green. We'll come back to Dublin, we'll come back to Donegal, we talked a bit about them there, but Kerry and Tyrone, I suppose I'll put them together because they're just, they've gone about their business at the weekend. Look, Kerry, firmly favourites over Kildare, obviously, as much as anyone over the weekend, but they handled their business, as I said. Kildare 17, Kerry 322 in the end. Jer, as a Kildare fan, how would you sum up the season? Not to get too much into Kildare, because Kerry are obviously the story here, but not a great season.
No, it's very disappointing. Very high hopes after Tailteann Cup win last year and a Division 2 campaign where it looked like they were going to be able to establish themselves there. And then there's like 15 minutes in the game against Derry in the league. And after that, the confidence drained slowly out of them. They just couldn't get it back. Like, they were actually very competitive against Westmeath.
Yeah.
And after that, they had a lot of injury issues. They have a very young and inexperienced team. The group was much more inexperienced this year than it was last year. And maybe if they had their time back, they would have tried to ease that transition a bit more. We'll have David Holland in the studio in 20 minutes' time. He can talk to us a bit about that. But like, look, Kerry named a strong team. Gainey started, Obiugli started. They got time into further All-Ireland winners. And at the end, Jack O'Connor said there's a couple more still to come back. Didn't sound very positive about Seanie O'Shea.
Mm.
So I'm not sure if that's going to be...
It looks like a few more weeks anyway.
Yeah, and it feels like they're going to be around for a few more weeks.
Yeah.
David Clifford, good at football.
Yeah, I know. Yeah, there's nothing new there. I think like it felt like with Kildare, and probably similar to Cavan as well, to an extent where it was almost, not punishment or cruelty, but the fact that they had to play a couple more games, you're kind of just waiting for the season to be over as a fan because it just hasn't gone the way you're hoping, it, particularly for Kildare, getting relegated to Division 3. Like as poor as they have been this season, I don't think they're a Division 3 team. I think they're a Division 2 team. And yeah, it leaves them in a tough spot. I suppose at least with Cavan, on the other hand, is they've stayed in Division 2, so they still put themselves in a decent position to be in the All-Ireland series next year, should they stay up again. But with Kildare, yeah, it's like, I don't think they belong in the Tailteann Cup. I think they're a better team than that.
Yeah, and
they have to show that at the same time, I suppose.
Exactly. And look, Meath went up and down for a couple of years. And again, Meath had one of those great performances at the weekend where it's like in the warm-up, Jordan Morris is like injured and it looks like he's done his groin. Yeah. And, oh God, it's a complete disaster for them.
Apparently at the Cavan game actually yesterday.
Oh yeah?
Supporting his Kingscore teammates.
Yeah.
Should be playing for Cavan.
Half and half scarf. there was definitely a kid with a half and half. Was it the Louth game? Was straight on at full time to get a sign. I was like, I haven't seen one of those before.
Yeah, there's a child in front of me wearing a half and half Cavan Dublin top as well. I think it's fine if you're of a certain age.
Yeah, seven.
Yeah.
Once you get to under 10, it's like, no, sorry, pick.
Yeah. So Kerry Tyrone. Sorry, we should mention Tyrone as well. That was some win over Mayo in Healy Park yesterday as well. Niall Morgan obviously kicks an absolute beauty of a score at the end to win it.
Is Jordan Flynn lucky not to be sent off? Just a kick in the head that like takes out Kieran, what's his name? I'm just blanking. McGeary. And you're like, he comes forward there, McGeary's head. And McGeary's split and has to go off.
Yeah.
And it's reckless. Like, you can't. Oh, the Aussie rules jump look cool when your man did it last week on his own player.
Yeah.
So I'm going to do it on the opposition now and kick him in the head. I'm like, well, whether or not you intended it, I don't care. It's like you did
it. Yeah, it's an interesting conversation.
Now he was really like, oh, I'm really sorry after that, but like, gotcha. And then nearly scores a goal immediately afterwards. You're like, well, I'm not sure about this, lads. But anyway, it didn't happen, so.
Yeah, it's an interesting one. Like, yeah, it probably is the thing of intention. And like, is that illegal?
Kicking somebody in the head. It might not be.
Not kicking somebody in the head. I don't think it is illegal per se. I'm not sure actually.
It must be. You can't use another human being to jump.
He could argue he's just jumped for the ball and putting your knee out as you're entitled to do so. Your man just happens to be there.
What's the difference between lifting? You know, they're on the same spectrum, I would argue.
Like there was I can't remember who the Dublin player was, but it was towards the start of the game there yesterday against Cavan where Kieran Brady is backpedaling to catch a kick out, and Dublin player just comes over the top of him and spills the ball, and Dublin end up picking up the scraps, and you're kind of thinking, is that not a foul? And it just wasn't. And like you're kind of thinking then after, like, they are just competing for the ball.
Yeah.
To an extent. So like, I don't know, if both players are intent on getting the ball. And
the other thing is, we saw a 13-a-side game at the start of the second half in the Derry match when Sean Hurson black carded two players from both teams. A lot of space in that pitch. That looked good.
Yeah. Like a challenge match, yeah. Okay, so Kerry and Tyrone again, clearly in the green. We already did the Knicks, so we might just do Monaghan. We might just play a video here. We have Conor McCarthy speaking to Tommy Rooney after the game, and he spoke very well on a few different bits, and they may be going a bit under people's radar in this year's championship and being looked at as a hard-working team. So we'll take a listen to Conor McCarthy here.
Conor McCarthy, what a win from Monaghan. You deliver yet again in Clonus. Looking at that scoreboard, 120-14, talk us through it.
Really happy with that, really pleased with that performance. I don't think their predictions went all that well this week for a lot of people. I don't think a lot of people expected us maybe to win that game with Roscommon having such a brilliant year so far. But look, we're absolutely delighted. I was really pleased with that second half performance in particular. I thought we worked some really, really nice scores, you know, and just delighted to get over the line against a really good Roscommon team, and fair play to them, brilliant Connacht champions. And look, we got the better of them today, and I'm sure we'll have more battles down through the years, you know.
I think you've been doubted all year long. Why do you think you have been doubted, and why have you delivered?
I don't know. I suppose we're probably labelled as a hard-working team, you know, and a team that never dies. But I think people might overlook our quality sometimes. I think we have some serious, serious quality players playing for Monaghan at the minute, and I think that might be slightly overlooked by some people. And I just think we're a really good team, and we can get results against big teams, and that's really what it comes down to. And I have full belief in the lads we have, and I think that's overlooked sometimes, you know.
I'm guessing the only thing you lost today was the toss before the game, because you ended up with the wind. You shot 24 times, you got 7 scores. What were you saying to yourselves at halftime?
We probably rushed a few of the shots now. We probably had a lot of players coming out in that arc, maybe looking for 2 points, and maybe didn't get our structure right in our attack. And look at our efficiency, obviously wasn't there as you point out. So we just thought we'd work the ball a bit more and lengthen our attacks a wee bit in the second half, and we're pleased with that.
I think the cliche has been, if Monaghan are behind by 12, 11, 10 with 15 minutes to go, you're not in it. But you were winning this week, it was different for you. You managed it expertly, didn't you?
Yeah, I suppose that is pleasing, and maybe it's a position that we were there in Cavan maybe in the first game. We went up by 6 very early in that game, or 9 maybe, and we saw that game out quite well too. So, you know, this team have been together a long time, you know. The
as well as quality, like, you've experienced.
Exactly. And look, we know how each other play, and we know when to slow it down, we know when to speed it up. And just really pleased with how we managed the second half now, Tommy, yeah.
I know there's a clatter of kids around you looking for an autograph, but just a quick one. I know the off-season was tough for you. I know Scotstown, you go well, you have a very competitive group there. You've been struggling with injury yourself and getting back and getting right. How tough is that, trying to get yourself to anywhere close to being able to feature in intercounty football at the minute?
Yeah, look, it is tough. There's no doubt about it. And look, I soldiered with Bobby McCall there for a long time during rehab. And I'm the lucky one today, and he's unfortunately missing out again today, so I count myself very, very lucky at the minute. There's a lot of players that go through injuries, and listen, every player will have their own story. Look, I had my story over the last 6 to 8 months, and listen, there's no doubt about it, you put in the hard work for days like this, and it's all worth it, you know.
He is some footballer.
Yeah, he's great, and nice little tribute to Bobby McCall, who obviously tore his ACL there the other weekend. So yeah, but Monaghan, like I was saying on the show a couple of weeks ago, I think they're a really, really good team. They maybe just rely on the big players to make things happen when it comes down the stretch in big games. But I think when it clicks for them, and
like, nobody wants to play them now, right?
Yeah, they're a really, really good team, quality team, and real quality around the pitch. And Conor McCarthy's one of them, but the defence, like Ryan O'Toole is one of the best defenders in the country. Some of the forwards they have, Stephen O'Hanlon's a great player. Bannigan's an absolutely fantastic footballer as well. Like, they really have a lot of talent around the pitch, and I think they showed that now at the weekend that, you know, Roscommon going into that game, I know Roscommon had that disappointment against Tyrone, where maybe not on they're on a bit of a low ebb, but still a really quality team, and Monaghan going out and just taking care of them like that was a real statement of intent. And yeah, I think it's probably a team on paper teams will look at and say, yeah, I wouldn't mind getting Monaghan, but when you actually look at them and how they've played in some of those big games this year, I certainly wouldn't want them in a preliminary or in the quarter final at this stage.
No, I think them and Tyrone are the ones you'll be like, ugh. Everybody else, people are going, okay, yeah, we might be underdogs for this. We accept that.
Yeah, so they're obviously in the green. Should we move on to Dublin?
Yeah.
So we do have them in the amber, which I'll let you debate that in the comments. But it was a good second half performance against Cavan. We talked about it a bit earlier on. They weren't really at the races in the first half per se. Like, Cavan should have been a few points up at the half, but once things started to click for them in the second half, they were out of sight for Cavan. But Tommy, amongst others, were speaking to Jerry Brennan in the aftermath. So we've about 3 minutes here of some interesting bits and pieces which we might listen to here.
Jerry, we're happy to be back on the sideline.
Great to be back out there, Colin. Yeah, after a long 12 weeks, so great to be back out there, yeah.
A hard 12 weeks, obviously, for yourself personally and for the team.
No, look, on that, lads, I issued a statement through my solicitor last week. I don't have a whole lot more to kind of add to it, Colin, other than to thank again the people who support me behind the scenes and all of yourselves, to be fair to you, in terms of common sense being applied. So, to be fair to Gerard Burns, he did ring me last week. We had a lovely conversation on the phone. It was sincere, honest, and he apologised. I accepted it, and we move on concentrating the football from my point of view. And then the Congress is the opportunity to try to avoid something happening.
Just to clarify, again. Jarlath rang you over his comments on Morning Ireland last week and subsequently at the All-Ireland
Vote. He did. Very sincere and honest and friendly conversation. And to be fair to Jarlath, I think he's done a lot of great work. With my third level hat on, he's been a super present that way. And then with the new rules as well, he's been super. And to be fair to him, he picked up the phone, gave me a phone call, and he acknowledged what he acknowledged, and I accepted it, and we move on then.
In a spectator capacity, did you get to go to any of the Dublin games?
Yes, was that all the games? Yeah.
The ban obviously carries over to next year. So
yes.
There's two league games as well. What do you think should be changed in Congress?
I should be on the sideline for the two league games next year, and the ban needs to be layered in terms of the CCC has to have some sort of discretion to be able to integrate and acknowledge mitigating circumstances, history, whatnot, because it's a tough job for referees, to be fair to them, and with so much going on at half time, and we've seen what happened up in Derry again last night watching that. So Sean Horson has been busy, but he did what he did last night. So, like, it's a tough task for the referees, so there has to be a bit more of an opportunity for a review committee similar to what they have in rugby to look back over things, because it's not fit for purpose, the current setup as it is.
You got a big roar from the core Dublin support that were here an hour and a half early when you first emerged onto the field. Was it emotional being back on the sideline today?
I mean, you're just trying to stay focused, Tommy, on the football and ensure that you are thinking straight for the players. Obviously, Cavan, their last two championship matches, Westmeath, and possibly 5-6 weeks before that was Monaghan. They had a lot of changes from the Monaghan game to the Westmeath game. And again, a bit of uncertainty around who they might start. So I was just trying to keep sharp when we got to Cavan first 15 to ensure we had our couple of matchups and structures right. So I was just focusing the job at hand.
Has it reignited you a little bit, the fact that you're out of Croke Park?
I think so, John. I think the evidence speaks for itself. And if we are to get a home draw, I know our senior hurlers have a big game away to Clare on Saturday night in Turles. So I'd love to go and play. If it was a home draw for Dublin, probably be on a Sunday, play in Parnell Park and get out of Croke Park.
Right. Very interesting that the Parnell Park thing has come up.
Yeah. I think a lot of people would welcome that side to see Dublin play a championship game in Parnell Park. And I think it has been an issue for Dublin this season, that Croke Park feels a bit soulless at times. It's been rather empty. And even with the Westmeath game, say, that was played in Croke Park, it felt like there was more Westmead fans there than in Dublin, which is not a place, it's not a good place to be. And I think they've tended to play a bit better outside of Croke Park as well. So all that considered, I think it makes sense to having Parnell Park. Whether they actually can do that or not, I don't know. I don't know what the details are of, you know, whether they're obliged to play in Croke Park. I don't know how that works, but I think Dublin fans themselves as well would welcome that site.
I wonder what the split of tickets would be.
Yeah.
We'll have to wait and see. The draw is 8:35 this morning. Tommy has been in touch to say that the order of things is kind of preordained. So we're going to find out who Monaghan are playing first.
Okay.
I'll get you the details of this here now. So the first draw will be Monaghan to play Donegal or Westmeath. Then the rest of the three games will be drawn from there because that's the least amount of options that they have.
Okay.
You can't have repeat and... the rest of the three games will be drawn from there. After that, there's a draw for home advantage, which I don't understand. Yeah. Why don't you just do the first team who comes out?
I don't know.
Maybe because there's a pot, you know, there's two separate pots.
Yeah.
So that's the point. I do understand it now.
Maybe
there's pot A and a pot B, and if you have to draw pot A, then they can't automatically have home advantage. Okay, so I get it. It's just the draw for home advantage. There must be, there's no other way of, can we just have a free draw now, no?
I don't know. Maybe there was some complaints. They've obviously done that in the past. Teams just weren't happy that it's decided in one.
Because the losers are on one side and the winners are on one side.
Yeah.
Then you do need to have some kind of. But is there no advantage for being coming through the? There's no seeding. I know Mark McHugh was talking about that there's no home advantage for being coming through the champions route. Now, obviously, he's making this point after they've just lost a game, which is probably tricky enough.
I think it's a fair point, though, because you're also, obviously, in that round, on paper, they're playing better teams. They're playing winners as well, which is, you know, on paper, as I say, is a tougher draw.
Yeah.
So they probably should see some type of reward in the next round. But
Or should these all be in Croker as triple headers, quadruple header? Two double headers over the weekend?
First game at 10 a.m. Yeah, I don't know. It'd be interesting to see anyway. Monaghan, I think if you're Monaghan, you're looking at, you're probably hoping for Westmead there, aren't you? Even though Donegal obviously coming off the back of a loss, I think.
Although imagine them knocking Donegal out and rolling into the Ireland quarterfinals.
Jesus.
You get Donegal.
They might like a crack at them, to be fair. They might like a crack at them. Yeah, they might like to play them now. So where are we in the performance rankings now? So Dublin, look, I'm getting some pelters in the comments for putting them in amber. I just think that first half performance...
Pelters because they're too low or too high?
Because they're in amber. They should be in green.
Right.
Which is a fair. Maybe they're
no, you put them
a
green
shaded amber.
Come back to us when you're Dublin.
You beat the worst team in the draw.
Congratulations.
And
special prize.
The first half was very unconvincing. So
and
I'm
and
not
their supporters are very, like some of their supporters at halftime were like, she's not sure we're getting out of here. But anyway, they did. So they're still alive and that's all that counts.
Yeah, well, got the job done, I suppose, yeah. They win again, they'll be in the green. Mayo Armagh, we won't get too much into it because we talked a good bit about them already. They're in the amber. I suppose the reason they're not in the red as losers is because the way the games went, they both lost with the last kick of the game. Particularly Armagh, it's you know, you don't want to pile on Ethan Rafferty. He's getting a lot of abuse online, which is completely unwarranted. Makes a mistake at the end. That's not indicative of the team performance, I guess. Maybe you could argue they shouldn't let Sam Mulroy get that shot off. At the end, but look, I think it's extremely fine margins there. So
yeah, and sorry, no
also
Hooter.
2 points up as well at that point. It's not like it's a 1 point.
No
advantage.
Hooter is like what? Come on, lads.
Yeah, it was
no clock for the Hooter. There is a Hooter, but it's totally
there is actually a clock. It wasn't there's an image there from behind Sam Mulroy, I think it was when he was taking that shot. There's actually an image of the Hooter. It's not in the best place. It's kind of like. In front of the fans, it's kind of hard to see.
Okay,
but it is there. So I know there was a bit of controversy around it, but there was a shot clock. So I think the graphic on the RT broadcast was slightly off. So that was the confusion there.
Okay,
but yeah, look, I don't think there wasn't any protests on the pitch really from our map players.
It's if we'd gone back to the situation where one final play. None of what happened. There's no room for it. Imagine if we'd lost that moment because.
Yeah.
Anyway.
Yeah, no. Like I know people were saying online that you know you don't get these moments without this style of Hooter. I think you actually still do if it was last year's format. I think you still get that bit of drama, but then the added thing of the last play and that kind of, you know, everyone points to the David Clifford point or two-pointer against Donegal in last year's final. You get moments like that. So I still think last year's format was a little bit better, but I think this, it does have its moments, this style, but some games do kind of just end very flat, don't they?
Yeah.
In the middle of the pitch, yeah, and someone's just dribbling the ball. Anyway, so yeah, Mayo Armagh in the amber because of their...
We'll come back to that.
Nature of the losses. So. Yeah, we'll skip. We had World Cup pre-match anthems and stuff. We can skip that for now. I think they're in the amber because it's been divided opinion.
We'll come back to that with Phil later on.
Yeah. Donegal in the red. I think that's fair to say. Look, we're talking about close losses. It was a narrow loss to Cork, but at home in Ballybuffet, I don't think anyone expected Cork to get a result there. And Cork, we were speaking earlier, like, I think they're a really good football team, but Donegal should be winning that game. I know the football pod are getting a few pelters for their predictions before the game, but I don't think anyone was saying otherwise, really. Like, Paddy Andrews maybe went a little bit over top with 15 points differential, but look, I think that's a massive upset. And like I say, it has real implications for Donegal now. They have to play another game. And, you know, as I said earlier, it's something that they've spoken about over the last season or so, and that it's really affected them going down a stretch, and they've done it to themselves now this time.
Yeah.
So it's, they're definitely in the red after that performance, I think. And I don't think they'd argue that whatsoever.
Give us your impromptu power rankings there in the comments, yeah, and we'll put them to David Hyland in a minute.
Kildare, Roscommon and Cavan I've grouped in together. Look, we've spoken enough about Kildare and Cavan, I think, at this point.
Yeah, I mean, Roscommon must be feeling, oof,
yeah,
what a wasted opportunity, because they had all of the accoutrements required to have a deep run now. And some teams who they will feel they're better than are alive and kicking, and they're in the draw this morning and they're not. So we'll come back to them later in the week.
Yeah, we definitely will. We'll touch on them again. And finally, I just had the hydration breaks, the World Cup. This is divided opinion. And I suppose going into the tournament, people were concerned about the heat.
Yeah, which is fair
and
enough.
The temperatures in the USA, looking back to the 94 World Cup, obviously there was a lot of issues around that. But it feels like the kind of blanket ruling that there's just going to be water breaks in every game is a bit over the top. Like when they're playing in 20 degree weather.
Yeah.
And like I think specifically yesterday, the Netherlands-Japan game, nothing happened in the first 25 minutes and they were being given a break. And it's like, I'd say even the players don't want a break here. There's no need. So maybe if they went case by case, might suit the tournament a little bit
better.
The
indoor stadiums, which are cool and climate controlled.
Air conditioned.
Perhaps don't need them.
No, I don't think so.
But it's a perfect 3-minute ad break to make a lot of money. And sure, that's what it's all about. Right, that's this week's performance rankings.
Off the Balls Performance Rankings.